But Veterans Day is a day that's very important to me, and I've always recognised it as a solemn day of remembrance for those who have lost their lives in war. So wishing someone a happy Veterans Day seems to miss the point. Not everything in life is happy. In fact, even our wishing each other happiness on holidays tends to suggest that most of the time we're not happy. And now, being from Britain, happiness is not something that comes naturally to me. I grew up Presbyterian, and you know, with their emphasis on human depravity and a corrupt soul, that seems much more grounded reality than any foolish optimism about happiness. And human history seems to have plenty of examples where humanity has taken the low road in its treatment of one another. And reviewing human history with its seemingly constant violence and injustice usually stirs in me emotions of sadness and anger, and often both. And history or our current news rarely stirs the emotions of happiness in me. But perhaps I'm being overly negative about this, but to show that I'm not alone in this view, there was a proposal by a psychologist, and I have to add he was a British psychologist, to have happiness classified as a psychiatric disorder. I originally thought this was a joke from a satirical magazine like The Onion, but it was actually in the Journal of Medical Ethics, which is not usually a battle of laughs. And here is what the abstract of the proposal says. It's proposed that happiness be classified as a psychiatric disorder. In a review of the relevant literature, it's shown that happiness is statistically abnormal, it's associated with a range of cognitive abnormalities, and probably reflects the abnormal functioning of the central nervous system. One possible objection to this remains that happiness is not negatively valued. However, this objection is dismissed as scientifically irrelevant. So there you have it. Happiness is abnormal, at least in Britain. And we British probably can be a miserable bunch. Perhaps that's why the American colonies wanted independence. They wanted the chance to be happy, or at least to pursue happiness. And at the very founding of the United States Declaration of Independence, there's talk about happiness. And one of the most famous sentences in the Declaration says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." So this is considered a powerful statement of individual human rights, has been called one of the best-known sentences in the English language. And it's a powerful statement of human rights. It's a great shame that it talked about all men rather than all people being created equal. If it said all people, I wonder if women would have got the vote 140 years earlier. Alas, like the reading earlier by Hosea Ballou, its sexist language was a product of its time, though I think the impact of the Declaration of Independence was far more significant. And Thomas Jefferson was the main author of the Declaration, and he acknowledged that most of his ideas were not original. And scholars recognize multiple influences in the Declaration. And one of the major influences was, somewhat ironically, the British political philosopher John Locke, who was one of the most influential thinkers in the 17th and 18th century. And he wrote extensively about the just use of power by governments. And about 100 years before the Declaration of Independence, he said that people had the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. Locke believed that property rights were fundamental to human rights, both of which should be protected by the government. And it's interesting that Jefferson changed this aspect of Locke's work to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of property seems much more in line with our lives and our current consumer culture of the United States. And the modern American and British views of individual property rights are by no means a universal view. Many of the indigenous Native American groups in New England struggled to understand the early American colonists' ideas of ownership of land. A common view among many Native American groups of that area was the land does not belong to us. We belong to the land. And this, in many ways, is a radical interpretation of our Seventh Unitarian Universalist principle of a respect of the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part. And many Native Americans saw humans as part of the environment, part of something larger than ourselves, with no sense of ownership. And that is a radically different worldview, and almost makes a clash of cultures inevitable as soon as the early colonists started claiming ownership of land. And what did the Native Americans make of the first no trespassing signs? And this is not unique to Native Americans. Many indigenous groups throughout the world struggle with the dominant Western ideals of individual property rights. And even in my home country, Scotland, the native non-English language, Gaelic, does not have a word for individual ownership. It only has language for community-only ownership by families or clans. The language has no ways of saying, I own this. It can only say, we own this. That is a remarkably different approach to living than what we have in our current modern society. Yet think about how we talk about ownership within this religious community. In our religious tradition, ownership and responsibility does not lie with some centralized power or with the minister. Blame may lie with the minister, but not authority. But ownership and responsibility lies with each of us here. The ownership and responsibility lies with the members, all the members of this religious community. We talk about our church, our religious education program, our members, our minister, the land that we own, and in this modern world, our web page and our Facebook page. As individuals of this religious community, we own none of it as individuals, but together, each of us own all of it. And the idea of individual property is so fundamental to how British and American societies operate that we forget it's a choice we make as a society. And I find it interesting that the individual pursuit of property was downplayed by Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence and replaced by the pursuit of happiness. And of course, there are many benefits to individual ownership, since as individuals, we generally take much better care of things we own as individuals than we do as a community. It's sad, but I think that's true. The desire for ownership, be it a house, a car, or other item, can be a primary motivator for many of our actions. Now, the exact relation of ownership to happiness is a complex one. The material wealth of most Americans has increased enormously since the 1950s, but most surveys say that happiness for most Americans has declined since the 1950s. The pursuit of property may be a major motivator for many of our actions, but it doesn't seem to make us happier. And this makes sense to me, since pursuing property to a certain level of comfort, such as having a safe place to live and enough to eat, can reduce our fear and insecurity, therefore increase our happiness. But beyond these basic comforts, the continual pursuit of property and goods, which is encouraged by our economic system, I believe can result in more and more dissatisfaction. As our expectations are continually raised, then the likelihood of happiness, or even just simple contentment, can diminish. Perhaps Jefferson was onto something when he replaced the pursuit of property by the pursuit of happiness. Some historians believe that Jefferson de-emphasized the protection of property by the government to allow taxation, but most historians believe Jefferson wanted a more virtuous idea to go along with life and liberty. because there's something about property Jesuson felt was crass. So happiness was a very important concept in the 18th century, since many of the liberal philosophers like Jefferson and Locke were justifying the coming of the powers of kings and tyrants, who were often the same thing. And the justification defined the role of government to serve the people by seeking the greatest happiness for the greatest number. And judging by this standard, it would seem that our present government is failing miserably, since no one seems happy currently. At the time of the writing of the Declaration of Independence, happiness was considered the supreme determiner of a person's actions. The idea was mentioned earlier that I gave by Hosea Ballou, who is considered the father of a universalist side of our tradition. And he stated, man's major goal in all he does is happiness. Were it not for that, he could never have any other goal. And Hosea Ballou wrote this about 30 years after the Declaration of Independence and still reflects the belief of that time in the pursuit of happiness as a major motivation for people's actions. And the Declaration itself has a strong religious context, emphasizing rights endowed by one's creator, meaning God. Ballou likewise believed we had a God-given right to be happy, and we were created to be fulfilled and happy. So Jefferson, from a political point of view, stated the pursuit of happiness is our right, and Ballou, from our own universalist religious tradition, stated that happiness is our main stimulus to noble action. So it seems like happiness is an important idea, but I ask, is the pursuit of happiness an appropriate religious goal? In the earlier reading, Ballou warned that acting only for our own individual happiness is irreligious and wicked. The focus on one's own individual happiness can easily slip into narcissism and selfishness. Ballou believed true happiness would come when we acted justly on the behalf of others and dealt mercifully with them, a universal system of benevolence. And over the last 200 years, we have become increasingly a more individualistic culture, and many in our society do not think in terms of the greatest happiness of the greatest number. As well as the overemphasis on individual happiness, the idea of happiness as a goal to be pursued seems problematic to me, because I think it implies that we reach some stable state of happiness, and I don't think life is like that. Given the constant change in our world and the finite nature of human life, then any expectation of a lasting state of happiness seems doomed to disappointment. Our lives are filled with challenges such as illness, loss of loved ones, disappointments in relationships, financial uncertainty, and injustice in many forms. Now, being happy through all those struggles of life, it may not be a psychiatric disorder, as was stated earlier, but it may not be a meaningful response to life's challenges. Having expectations of lasting happiness can lead to a sense of disappointment and even despair. I heard it said that expectations were just premeditated resentments. Therefore, I treat life with high hopes and low expectations. So what are my expectations and hopes about happiness? I think we have brief moments of happiness rather than lasting periods. And these moments often come when reflecting on the past, and often the immediate past. These reflections can be in some great time of connection with family and friends, or a great event we worked hard on that we felt was successful, a time we took for ourselves to reflect on our growth as people through skills acquired or changes of behaviour. Happiness for me is a reflective quality, where some past event gives us immense satisfaction. I think happiness is more often a consequence of what we do than the motivation of what we do. Take some of the life struggles that I just mentioned earlier. With illness, I seek care. For loss of loved ones, I seek comfort. For disappointments with relationship, I seek understanding. For financial struggles, I seek support. And for injustice, I seek to work for justice. Mainly what I seek with life's struggles is the compassion and understanding of others to help me cope. And that's where I think our religious communities can play such an important role in our lives. Many people seek religious communities to help them cope with life's concerns and sorrows, and also celebrate life's joys. The congregation I serve in San Marcos has a shared joys and concern portion of the weekly worship service that is a ritualized form of that. But the sharing of joys and concerns among us does not just happen in worship. It happens in the fellowship hour here in House and Hall after the service, or sometimes before, when we meet with our fellow congregants to share what is important in our lives. And this is a vital, vital part of the fabric of any religious community. Through the sharing and reflection on the struggles and joys of life, we create the meaning in our lives. The sharing and reflection community can allow us to feel cared for, comforted, supported, and understood, which in time may lead us to moments of happiness as we reflect on how valued we are by other people. And the sharing of joys is important because if we can truly learn to find real joy in another person's joy, then this can increase the moments of happiness in our own life. In closing, I think Jefferson did get it right in pursuing happiness rather than property as one of our rights. But happiness is not the goal to be achieved, but moments of satisfaction to be savored in our lives. Aristotle said, happiness is the only thing that humans desire for its own sake. Unlike riches, honor, health, or friendship, which are sought not for their own sake, but for the cause of happiness. I would add that people may desire happiness, but life will place obstacles in the way of that happiness. How we choose between riches, honor, health, friendship, and connections with those around us will determine the depth and frequency of those moments of happiness. We do well to choose wisely. As we leave this place, may we take with it the warmth and graciousness we find by those here. May we take with us the spirit and spark of insight, and may we take with it and carry forth the love for all humanity. Amen.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.